The heavy storm of Wednesday night caused considerable damage in the vicinity. The vivid flashes of lightning and the terrific crashes of thunder made many people tremble with fear. The old sinners must have thought that the end had come. Decatur Review, Friday, June 30, 1882. On the night of Wednesday, June 28, 1882, a violent electrical storm swept across the prairies of central Illinois, damaging buildings, tearing off rooftops, turning fields into mud. Despite the tempest's savagery, the clouds moved out quickly and the sun, just days past its zenith, made its appearance right on schedule the next morning, around 4:30. Local farmers were in the middle of a wheat harvest, but the storm had dumped enough rain to keep them from their fields for a day or two. When young school teacher Emma Bond awoke that Thursday, blue skies and the smell of moist black earth greeted her. The overnight storm had washed away the previous day's heavy heat and humidity, and that was a blessing. The long skirts, heavy petticoats, and high necklines of Emma's day were much more bearable in mild weather. Thursday promised to be easy, since it was the last full day of the school year, and she was expecting just one pupil, little Charlie Masters. The 8-year-old had to finish up a few reading and spelling lessons if he wanted to take part in the school's year-end festivities on Friday. Emma planned to set him straight to work and then give him a short mid-morning break while she crossed the road to rehearse some music for Friday's ceremony with the Pettis girls. Minnie and her younger sister, Ona, short for Iona, were in their mid-teens and only slightly younger than their teacher. But that was not unusual in a time when a girl in her late teens needed only to pass a written exam to become a rural school teacher. Emma had accepted the position at the Montgomery School just 3 months earlier. As it happened, Minnie's and Ona's older sister, Cora, had also applied for the same job, but it had been awarded to Emma. Perhaps Emma was given the position because she, along with her 5 sisters, had been educated at home by a governess. Their father certainly had the means to provide his girls with more privileges than most farm children enjoyed. Their dress, while not extravagant, seemed slightly out of place in rural Christian County. The girls even got piano lessons. Emma had mastered the ivories quite nicely, which was why she was going to accompany the Pettis girls on Friday. When Charlie arrived at school to finish his lessons, Emma was there to greet him. Upon entering, he glanced up and noticed that the scuttle hole leading to the attic was ajar. He pointed it out to his teacher, but she seemed unconcerned and dismissed the matter. Charlie shrugged, took his seat, and set to work in his reader. At 10:30, his teacher sent him out for recess, saying she was going over to the Pettis house and would return in 30 minutes. The Pettis home belonged to Mrs. Margaret Pettis, widow of George, and stood Kitty Corner across the road, about 200 yards from the school. Margaret had raised her children alone after George's passing in the mid-1860s. However, by no means was she in dire straits. Her husband had left her with a substantial piece of first-rate farmland, and her widowed brother, Robert Johnson, had stepped in to help her keep the place going. Of her 8 children, Margaret had already married off 5. The 4 oldest girls had chosen husbands from the local stock of farm boys. None lived more than a short ride from their mother's home. Cora, the schoolteacher, had wed most recently, in April.